You're listening to China Africa Talk.
Jambo, ni Bridget akikuletea kipindi kinachohusiana na China na Afrika.
Vous écoutez le dialogue sino-africain avec Bridget.
Everything China, everything Africa.
Olá, você está ouvindo China Africa Talk com Bridget.
سيدتي وسادتي مرحبا بكم في الحوار الصيني العربي مع بريدجيت.
Welcome back to the program. You're listening to China Africa Talk. I'm your host, Bridget Mutambirwa, coming to you from the Chinese capital in Beijing with more discussions on what's happening with China and Africa from a Chinese and African perspective. The curtain comes down on 2024. This year will be remembered as a period of stability and remarkable progress in China-Africa relations. The 2024 summit of the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation brought together leaders from China and 53 African countries, along with the chairperson of the AU Commission and the Secretary General of the United Nations. The summit marked a milestone. China has entered into strategic partnerships with all African countries having diplomatic ties with it, and the characterization of the overall China-Africa relations has been elevated to an all-weather community with a shared future for the new era. China-Africa relations are now regarded as being at its best in history, contributing not only to bilateral stability, but also global stability.
China-Africa relationship has been on the process of deepening and further stabilization.
Africa and China maintained their pool as most reliable, stable, contributing to stability in the international order.
From trade to technology, infrastructure to education, and people-to-people exchanges, what defined China-Africa relations in 2024? To unravel the answers, I'm now joined by Liu Baocheng, Director of Center of International Business Ethics, University of International Business and Economics, Charles Onanaiju, Director of the Center for China Studies in Nigeria, and Emmanuel Matambo, Research Director of the Center for China-Africa Studies at the University of Johannesburg in South Africa. Okay, so today we will be talking about 2024 in retrospect. It's been quite a busy year, actually quite progressive on the part of China-Africa relations. So many programs that marked the friendship of China-Africa relations moving forward, FOCAC, the BRI, and the BRICS as well. But I'd like to hear from your end, gentlemen. How would you characterize the China-Africa relations this year, 2024, and what are some of the key moments or milestones that stood out for you? Professor Liu?
Yes, this year has been a very much turbulent year, but in contrast, China-Africa relationship has been on the process of deepening and further stabilization. So this is really a very much of a highlight spot that can tell the message to the world that by sincere cooperation based on trust building, based on better understanding, and based on, more importantly, respect of each other, we can do a lot of positive things together. So specifically, China and Africa has achieved a record high trade growth despite of the dismayed picture of the world. And the Chinese investment in Africa has registered also historical high by an increase of over 200%. The infrastructure building is still going on, but we are diversifying more of the investment structure in Africa in line with the Africans' real need and get more catered to the local community. More of the greener, smarter technologies are also being used to engage with smaller projects because President Xi proposed the Small and Beautiful program.
Right.
So these are also very much impressive. And then more of the penetration by the private sector also command respect because techno has been there to be playing a very pivotal role in providing access to low-income houses with the telephone devices. And Ali Thermo has been increasing their presence and investment. And this provides not only the daily needs, but also give more opportunities for them to see that what is going on in China. And another very important issue is the construction of China-Africa corporate zone in Hunan. The raw materials are being imported and get processed, and e-commerce are being developed jointly, particularly the Chinese young people with African youngsters. So these are really very promising picture, so that I feel very much proud that after so many years' efforts, particularly over the last one decade, we have achieved so much, and so much more is in store for the future to deepen our cooperation.
Well, I'll ask all of you the same question as well. And the nice thing is that we have African guests here from different regions of the continent. Charles, I'd like to know from you, what were some of the highlights and milestones for you that stood out from your perspective?
Well, I think just like Professor Liu has suggested, it's been quite an interesting year, despite obvious global turbulence, you know, challenges across several regions, hotspots, the Middle East, Europe, the United States, with chaotic electionary campaign that saw two assassination attempts of presidential candidate, called the war in Ukraine, the war in Gaza, Hezbollah. Despite all this, despite these turbulences, despite these obvious hotspot issues that are quite threatening to the international order, Africa and China maintained their pool as most reliable, stable pool in a international system, contributing to stability in the international order. For me, this is quite significant that of course, the most visible and obvious most visible engagement between the two sides is the FOCAC process, you know, the fourth summit, the ninth ministerial conference, which was elevated to summit that held in Beijing in September. Of course, it was a watershed. As usual, it attracted global attention, global headlines. African leaders take it very serious. Almost 50 of them were in Beijing to meet with their counterparts, head of the United Nations, Guterres, and other important international organizations were in Beijing. And that meeting turned out an important pivotal one. Several declarations, partnership raised to all-time comprehensive engagement. And as I've always said in the past, these are not rhetorics. These are well thought out. These are well engaged. These are well measured. In earnest, that meeting with a 10-point action plans outlined by President Xi, we are an important game changer, a new high. As you know, action plans are not haphazardly outlined. They are done in absolute engagement, collaboration, and consultation with Africa. I myself, part of a think tank, engaged very, very fruitlessly with Chinese colleagues. Also received a whole lot of delegations to discuss issues that are so the scheme, the outcome, the agenda. We are never decided haphazardly by one person. It is an outcome of extensive, profound consultation across the board, across all sectors. And then the outcome, the action plans, keyed into the core challenges, to the core needs of the various parties involved in the engagement. In Nigeria in particular, I tell you something very unique happened, something very historical and interestingly quite unusual. That was President Tinubu's first visit to China. Of course, his attendance of the FOCAC meeting also coincided with a formal state visit to China. And 19-point document, comprehensive understanding, which elevated the partnership to strategic, comprehensive strategic, with a view to build a community of shared future for the two sides, was drawn up. And unlike the previous meetings, President Tinubu returned to Nigeria for the first time in Nigerian history, appointed a special coordinator for China-African Strategic Partnership. Before he came to China, he had visited over 20 countries, participated in several international forums. And of course, it had been the usual thing, come back and then the foreign ministry takes over, various key institutions takes over in the pursuit of its outcome. But in the case of China, he came back and he considered the outcome of his engagements too important, too phenomenal. he appointed a special coordinator, a director general, and to oversee the implementation of Nigeria and China strategic partnership, the very first time in Nigerian history.
Thank you for those detailed illustrations there. Dr. Matambo, how would you characterize the China-Africa relations in 2024?
Thank you very much once again. My colleagues have traversed what has happened, especially at the level of the state. I will answer your question in two parts. The first part, obviously, will refer to what has happened at the level of the political elite. I think one of the things that really stood out for me was the frankness with which South Africa's president, Cyril Ramaphosa, spoke to his Chinese counterpart, President Xi Jinping. Like it was the case with Nigeria, South Africa's Ramaphosa also undertook a state visit. And during the talks that he had with President Xi Jinping, he spoke quite frankly about the trade deficit that South Africa is running with China. Now, that was important for two reasons.
Okay.
The first reason being that wherever there are certain concerns about Africa's trade imbalance with China, they are confident enough to state that if we are speaking in the spirit of win-win cooperation, then we should walk the talk. So that was quite important for President Cyril Ramaphosa to highlight that.
Okay.
The second important aspect of his frankness was the fact that Africa's relationship with China has reached a stage of comfort wherein the parties can be frank with each other. Because this happens even in normal social interaction.
Yeah.
You do not know someone to an appreciable degree. You tend to hedge your bets. You tend to be very careful in what you say.
Right.
There are some things that you might find uncomfortable, but you tend to just sweep them under the carpet.
Right.
But once you have built up a friendship of trust with someone else, then you can be frank enough to state what concerns you about that relationship. So that is what I found very key in what President Cyril Ramaphosa spoke about. Now, coming to the summit itself, and that's the second part of my answer. Now, the first part is talking about the elite. The second part of my answer refers to the 10-point partnership action plan that President Xi Jinping outlined. Now, I'm going to zoom in on what I consider to be very key and very notable.
Right.
And that was the emphasis, by the way, on the emerging realities of Africa's relationship with China. And these emerging realities are not confined to the level of the elite. There is increasing interaction now between ordinary Chinese citizens plying their trade on the African continent, ordinary Africans going to China for scholarships, for reasons of tourism even, and for reasons of business. Now, that shows that Africa's relationship with China going into the future should take into cognizance the importance of ordinary Africans and ordinary Chinese.
Right,
and President Xi Jinping alluded to that by talking about people-to-people exchanges, and he also spoke about the establishment of an engineering technology academy. And then he also committed to build 10 Lubanu workshops. Now, these are more like technical colleges that will help to skill. Exactly, that will help to skill thousands. We are talking about over 60,000 opportunities for ordinary Africans.
Which is something that we need as a continent.
We desperately need that because we are a very young continent. If we do not skill our young people in order to make them employable, then we are sitting on a ticking time bomb. Yeah. So that was quite important. And lastly, Bridget, was designating 2026 as the China-Africa Year of People-to-People Exchanges.
Right.
I thought that was of utmost importance because the future of Africa's relationship with China is no longer going to be driven by the elite only. It's also going to be driven about by the sentiment that Africans, ordinary Africans and Chinese interact and how they feel about each other.
Professor Leo, could you tell us what's the significance of this year's FOCAC summit and what have been your key takeaways from it?
The FOCAC brings up the 10 points of a partnership plan, which is really something that's highly commendable, provides inspiration for all the Chinese exporters and also investors and the banks behind it, funds behind it. So that's on the Chinese side. And then we also formulate the social responsibility allegiance on the Chinese side to invest in Africa so they pay more attention to accountability, sustainability. This is also called by the Chinese central government. Then the commitment is there to give further direction and more detailed direction to the Chinese players over there. And plus that we align better with the 2063 agenda in Africa now that the free trade agreement across the continent has been there. So it's not only the connectivity of the hard part which are all those infrastructures, but also the soft part. We build nearly 30 free trade agreements and also for mutual investment protection, avoidance of double taxation. So this year's FUCAC is there to give further boost and further hope and further inspiration to all the participants on the mutual basis as how we can really move ahead. Now, much more is reliant on the continued joint efforts to implement these plans. And I would also like to mention that we had haircut over some of the debt issues.
Right.
We also reduced our import tariff of many African goods down to zero. These are really commitment China can offer. And we are also very glad to see most part of Africa are on the right track of seeking industrialization, providing more value to their goods, and communities can really be better off with the participation of the Chinese involvement.
It's nice that you highlighted the zero tariff policy there. I was speaking with some traders from the African side who are looking to bring in stuff from Africa to China. Very encouraging. They're actually really excited about it. Charles, leaders of China and Africa vowed at this year's FOCAC summit to continue to work together for greater synergy between high-quality Belt and Road cooperation and the goals of Agenda 2063 of the AU and the UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. Now, how significant is this commitment and what roles do China and Africa play in advancing international cooperation and promoting global growth?
Well, like you said, these are very significant declarations and, of course, commitments and policy outline, policy positions, because it is also very important to translate declarations, intentions into policy roadmaps for implementation, for follow-ups. In this regard, I continuously worry about what I call the objective structural constraint of the African side, you know, building capacity, institutional capacity to deliver on commitments. Because the easiest part is grand declarations and outlines and all that. But the more difficult part is to walk the talk.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we know China has built a significant capacity, continuously reforming her institutions, updating her institutions, renovating her institutions with a view to strengthen it, to make it more stronger and transparent, efficient, and all that. Of course, we still have challenges of that in Africa.
Mm.
And I think it is important we continue to build our institutions so they become responsive to declaration. They have the capacity, the internal dynamism, the vitality to drive commitments so that commitments are not left on the table. And in this regard, Africa will also have to step up in the regards of building sufficient capacity institutionally, structurally, and enabling laws. Because, of course, we have several Chinese enterprises in Africa. Sometimes they are also challenged by the uncertainty in the rules. These are areas we need to step up so that we can optimize the outcome of this engagement. We can optimize the prospects of this engagement. If we build capacity, especially from our side, we can do more. And even for the opportunities of access to Chinese market, we need to drive policy instrument that enables the full optimization of our capacity to deliver on this, you know, because if we have access to Chinese market, one, that is good thing, then what do we take to the market? That become the issue, domestic policy instrument.
Dr. Matampo, the third Belt and Road Summit held last year laid out a vision for leaner, greener and smarter BRI. Now, what were the major milestones under the framework that shaped China-Africa relations this year? And can you share some projects that highlight these principles?
Yes, indeed. First of all, let us just start from the reality itself that China has realized that the mega projects of the initial phase of the Belt and Road Initiative were quite good in attracting attention on China's infrastructure investment on the African continent. So when it comes to this concept of smaller but beautiful projects. I'll talk about two things.
Okay.
The first thing is that they are more affordable. And the second thing is that they are also inviting the private sector to be involved in China's infrastructure involvement on the African continent. To speak quite specifically, I would talk about Connect Internet, which is a project that is being done by a gentleman called Zhou Tao from China. He has actually been colloquially called Mr. Wi-Fi in Kenya. He has done quite a commendable work in Kenya. He has reduced the number of costs for internet for Kenyans. That is something that is commendable. It actually speaks well about China's realization that maybe what is needed in Africa are minor, more modest infrastructure and technological initiatives that Africans, by the way, can easily pay for. The second example that I can give is a project that was started by Li Yi. She was actually working for McKinsey. She has also done some work in Kenya, so she's providing agricultural technologies to ordinary people in Kenya. Mm-hmm. She actually has intentions of expanding that to the rest of the African continent. That is something that is commendable. So I can talk about the initiative that China, Tanzania, and Zambia spoke about on the sidelines of the FOCAC summit that happened in September. So a realization that in China's infrastructure projects on the African continent, the private sector has to play a role. Profit-driven and capital-driven private sectors can be more effective because it is also in their best interest to make sure that the infrastructure development is also profitable at the level of this firm, but also at a personal level of Africans and Chinese.
Professor Liu, 2024 witnessed the BRICS expansion. More new members, including Ethiopia and Egypt from Africa, joined the grouping. What does this mean for the BRICS?
BRICS was created simply to identify the alliance of those big emerging economies. So that is why India, China, Brazil, South Africa, and also Russia become part of it. But now, over the years, people have seen the significance of the BRICS in terms of particularly the New Development Bank that set up, which really caters to sustainable development projects, which are very much commendable. And from all those projects, you do not really see any single cases of corruption, any single cases of a failure even. So this is highly attractive, and because this is really the main tangible stay within the BRICS. And then people in the global south, headed by those major economies, they realize that merely by relying on the commitment of the global north is not a completely wise idea. For example, the global north made a commitment for climate change investment, you know, no less than billion US dollars, you know, to help those global south. But that has never been delivered. And so, you know, why don't we work together? Because also the expanded BRICS have higher synergy among all those members. They're not really competing on the same market, competing with the same product categories. So with oil companies, with big manufacturing, a powerhouse, and also with great local factors of endowment, they can really do a far better job. And also the trust level is there, and the cultural approximacy, you know, for example, the Wundung culture in Africa and the Confucius culture all across Asia. So this can really bring us together to bring more fruits. But looking ahead, we really would like to see that the BRICS will be getting more and more institutionalized because, you know, with the expansion of members, they merely based on the understood trust or consensus, it may not be as efficient. So therefore, they need to enhance more of the rule building process.
Charles, I'd like to know from you, let's talk about technology and innovation there. How has the growing focus on technology and innovation shaped China-Africa relations in 2024? Have there been notable advancements or collaborations in digital transformation?
Technology is becoming a very important point of cooperation between China and Africa. Renewable energy become very significant for the two sides. We have seen an uptick in digital cooperation, digital economy, and this is becoming a rallying point for cooperation between China and Africa. And like you know, this goes beyond the former state actors. You know, in many circles of China-African cooperation, there is an increasing deployment of technology, which is bringing the two sides closer. Because during the period of the COVID, we see an uptick, a significant uptick in digital economy. E-commerce became the tool of choice in engagement through that difficult period of when there are constraints in physical engagement and all that. And that has not fizzled away. It has rather strengthened. And of course, in the 10 action plans, it was also emphasized that more will be done to expand technology, more will be done to expand digital and e-commerce. So we are beginning to see that as the new rallying point in China-African cooperation that is generating greater momentum in people-to-people engagement, facilitating trade, enhancing trade. And of course, like I said, not only in the area of trade, education, also culture, and all these are becoming quite an important driver, key drivers in the cooperation between the two sides. So in my view, there is more room to expand this. And so far, a lot of pilot projects have been undertaken in this result. Professor Mutembe spoke about the Luban project. You know, these are all important hubs in mainstreaming technology as the key engagement point between China and Africa.
Well, with regard to technology transfer for the Chinese experience, I think it may give some light to our African friends is that when China just opened its market, it's more of inviting foreign investment into China and bringing their technologies instead of simply, you know, buy those patents. So it's very costly. Plus that even if you buy a car, you've got to be able to drive a car. So you got to have the skills. So that's directly correlate with the capacity building process. And the other thing is that from what I see that in most part of Africa, you do not really need to have technological breakthroughs. So there are many low hanging fruits that are free off the shelf technology. It's not only from China Secretariat of the Free Trade Agreement, they can really, you know, engage in setting up a research with what is really available free technologies that can serve the pipeline to continue to feed to the growth of Africa.
I'd like to know from the three of you gentlemen, some personal China-Africa stories that you would like to tell the audience. And are there any particular experiences from this year that stood out for you? On a lighter note, Charles, I know you did many trips to Beijing.
Yeah, but the fact is each time I come to China, to be very sincere, yeah, there are a very important transformation that almost every day, every hour, sometime you return to China after a month, you will recognize where you were last time. It's been changed. It's not really so much about the physical transformation of China. To me, it is the thinking, the continuous exertion in the leadership, the restlessness in innovation, you know. So how much thinking goes into what we see in China? How much exertion goes into it? How much sacrifice goes into it? What is the theoretical challenge in understanding the need to maintain the momentum in development? Agreeing that development has no end. There is no end to a better life. There is always room for improvement. So the significant thinking that underlying these changes is what fascinates me, not necessarily the physical infrastructure or the physical transformation, but the thoughts, the thinking that goes into this is what actually fascinates me. And that's actually accounts for my usual Chinese experience.
Okay. Dr. Mutembe, your personal China-Africa story in 2024.
What I've enjoyed this year at a personal level is just a synergy that I have built up with some Chinese researchers. I've done some visits as well to the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, where we have explored certain areas of collaboration. I think that is of utmost importance. I hope, obviously, that going forward, we'll build on that as well. The Chinese consulate here in South Africa has been very active, for example, in providing donations to high schools in the Free State province of South Africa and in the Gauteng province, where the capital city of South Africa is found as well. I think that the consular is more at a people-to-people level.
Okay. Professor Liu, you mentioned one time in a conversation that we had that you were doing some research papers on Africa and China.
Yeah, we just submitted a paper on China-Africa relationship in terms of the China aid.
Okay.
And this paper identifies several stages China has gone in dealing with aid in Africa. It used to have been wrapped with the communist type of utopia and in support of, of course, the decolonization process. But eventually, we converge more onto development aid, in which responding to the real need for economic growth. And my personal story is I've been following very closely of what is going on in the Oriental Industrial Park, which is close to Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. We received a number of complaints from the Chinese investors because they feel that one is that they put up already the deposit and prepayment for further expansion of that park, which is good locally. But, you know, for 2 years, that has not been approved and all the red tapes need to be cut through. I think the local governments as a host, if you really want to have the right bird to make nest and lay eggs over there, you got to preserve the tree. You got to grow the water the tree instead of cut down the tree and drive away the birds. But another positive experience is that I've been teaching a bunch of international students. The African students particularly, they impressed me by not only, you know, earning good grades from me, but also they asked me, you know, how do I set up business? How do I take the opportunities of this wonderful partnership program? So it means that the younger generation, with their expanded vision, they're to be rather sensitive to new opportunities. I feel that there is a growing future for China-Africa cooperation. And also more of the Chinese students, they used to say, oh, you know, I need to go to the United States, I need to go to Europe. And they get also more and more interested in how they can really work with their African classmates as how to set up small businesses. So this is something that is very encouraging.
Listeners, we wish you a happy new year 2025, and be sure to tune into our next episode where we'll be looking at China-Africa relations in 2025 ahead. To get the latest update and more discussions on China-Africa relations, you can subscribe to our online newsletter at CGTN or Substack www.cgtn.com/subscribe/newsletter.html or via substack.com/@ChinaAfricaTalk. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post it on social media, or leave a rating and review. Thanks again. See you next time.